Okay, so today is the 15th of October, 2019. This is Dr. Adeola Dewis. Can you say your full name for the recording?
Well, Raphael Martin.
And where were you born?
Cardiff.
And what was your date of birth?
Oh, upon the 8th of June, 1964, in St. David's Hospital.
Okay, and...
Riverside, that's where I come from.
Okay, all right. And we're talking today about your dad, right? So okay. He qualifies as somebody who comes from the Windrush generation.
Yeah, my father came over here in 1951 to Birmingham. I wasn't born in. I might look that old, but no, I wasn't born.
Where did he come from?
Oh, to Jamaica.
And do you know his birth date?
My dad was born at the 19th of September 1917. That's the beginning of the First World War, isn't it? Start of the First World War. He'd been 102 if he was alive today, just the other day.
Did he ever talk about what Jamaica was like?
My father died when I was 13, so I don't remember a lot. But I remember, like, when there was having a conversation and I was listening, and they said they never knew what depression was till they come to this country. I remember they said that there was no depression in, he's obviously talking about Jamaica. He said people weren't depressed in Jamaica, it just didn't happen. They didn't even know what the word meant, they were telling me, while they were talking, you know. So I remember that. And when they used to talk about Jamaica, because I went to Jamaica, and I thought, I went there in about 2006, I think. Yeah, 2006, I think I went to Jamaica. And when I went to Jamaica, it was for miles per square mile. It was more murders in Jamaica at that time per square mile. I think I went in February than any other country in the world at that time. So when I went, even though it was sort of okay where I was, it's not a nice country at that time. And now it's not getting better. But when my parents used to talk about Jamaica, they made it sound like it was paradise. And I went to this place called what's it called? I've seen this place in Jamaica. I can't remember the name of the place right now. If I do later, I'll let you know. But it was so nice. I thought, well, this is the Jamaica that my parents used to talk about. The people were just, I think it's called Hanover. It was just so nice. The people, everyone was really nice. I remember I went in the market and I wanted to, and I like, you know, haggling. I like doing my little bit of hustling. I think I'm a good hustler. Well, so I went in the shop in the market and there was this man and I wanted this, I think it was only a map of Jamaica in a frame. And I said, how much is that? And just say he said like it was like $30. I said, no, how much is it to a Jamaican if you're a Jamaican? He said, listen, if you're white, you're black, you're Jamaican, you're Chinese, it's still $30. You know, and I thought, he's just saying, like, in that place, it's like, it doesn't matter. You know, we do things equal. And I like that, you know. And I didn't buy it, but I did like that, you know. So, yeah, that's all I really know about Jamaica. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no, obviously, Jamaica, I mean, the food is beautiful. And things like that. And, the sea's clean. You know, it's just when you go to Jamaica, obviously the West Indies, and you come back to this country, and you eat the food tastes like cardboard. I mean, that's one thing I noticed. So, you know, obviously, like I remember when I was a child, there used to be a man. His name was Green. Mr. Green, we used to call him, because you called everyone like their titles, like Mr., Mrs., you never used first names when I was a child, and you had to, obviously you had to respect people, you call them good morning, you know, Mr. this or Mr. that. It's not like slack like it is today. But anyway, he used to come and visit, not just us, but the West Indian people, and he used to sell the proper West Indian food, the yam, you know, green bananas, the ackee, the saltfish. People didn't know what that was in them days, people do now. So we had the hard dough bread. I used to like the bullet cake. Oh, I used to love the bullet cake. And my dad used to like sugar cane. You could buy these sugar cane drinks, you know, things like that. And remember that, this cocoa chocolate. And it was like solid. It was together, and then you grate it and you make the chocolate drink. But my dad died when I was 13, so I, you know, got to go back a long, not that I'm that old, but I got to go back a long way to try and have the memories, you know, and yeah, so.
How old was your dad when he came over?
My dad was 33. I'm like the same age as Jesus. Started the first church in Birmingham. And then that was 1951. I think my mother came 1952. But what it was, like we were talking earlier on, in them days, you know, they weren't sort of welcome at churches, the white churches, because we're all churches all owned by white people, most in them days. And they, you know, kept to themselves, very closed shop. You know, so when a black person come, they sort of feel like an outcast, even though people are supposed to be Christians. So it was easy then for black people to start churches, because in Jamaica, there's more churches per square mile again than any other country in the world in Jamaica. More churches per square mile. So obviously they come here, and it was practically a Christian country, Jamaica. So they come here and they still wanted to fellowship and worship and do like they'd done in Jamaica. But West Indians, when my dad had his church in Cardiff, on top of the one in Cardiff, I noticed like they're very vibrant, they had a lot of life. And when and a lot of people, English people, or Welsh people, British people, they're very stiff, the British stiff upper lip, I suppose. But the thing is, what's funny, I'm like that, see? I'm more English than Jamaican. I might act more like a Jamaican in my sort of the characteristics, but I like being quiet and calm in church, whereas West Indian people, when it comes to church time, it's like sister act. They jump, they dance, they sing, all different languages, because to them, to speak in tongues, it's like speaking in English, whereas English people or British people in them days, you know, a lot of them didn't even accept it properly, even though a lot of English churches were Pentecostal. I remember going to the City Temple when I was really young. I'm talking the 70s. And to me, it was like not much different to like Methodist, Baptist. I didn't find much difference. You know, they talk about it was lively and this was happening. Yeah, a lot of people might have been going and the Spirit of God was moving, but it never had the life that the church, that our church had. And I remember I spoke to this lady. I used to be a youth manager in the Beacon Centre. And there was a lady there, and her son was in a bit of a trouble, so I used to go over and talk to the people sometimes. And I was talking to this lady, and then she actually said she used to go to my dad's church. My dad's church was in Wells Street. So I thought to myself, oh, let me ask this white lady, you know, what it was like, because there wasn't loads of white people in our church, you know. So I thought to myself, let me ask her what she thought about it. So I said, oh, what did you think of it? She said, it was like going on holiday. Because, obviously, you know, like women especially, I think they like dancing and moving. And our church was sort of like that. So, yeah, I mean, nowadays people try and make church entertaining. And I don't think church should be entertaining. You know, I think church should be so warm. It should be like so welcoming. It should be the place that people want to go because they know that God is there, you know. And you know, I mean, for me as a Christian, I believe it's God who gives us life. You know, it's like your parents; they give you life, and I think you should respect them because they're your parents. And I think it's the same with God, because He gives us life. You know, we should show respect. You know, when we're in His house and do everything we can to get to know Him.
So how challenging was it for your father to open a church? You said that at that time, it was common for, you know, people who weren't white to open churches. But was it an easy process? Do you know anything about that?
Well, this is all I know. Because I obviously wasn't born when they did do their churches and you know. But like my dad, he had the first black Pentecostal church in Wales. And like why I say it was easy was my father, he always had big houses. So my dad must have been okay back in his country. And over here, when obviously the West Indians come here, they put them as labourers. They wouldn't give them their titles. My dad was a stonemason. And I remember I said to my mother one day, I said, Mom, I said, how did Dad buy his first house? You know, just asked that question. And she said, she was Jewish. I didn't know my mother was Jewish until this day. So she said, what happened? He said, your dad wanted to buy this house, but in them days, they weren't selling houses to like black people and stuff. They were like very funny. So my fab wanted to buy this house and didn't want to sell him the house. And the man was Jewish. And my dad said to the man, he said, my wife's Jewish. So that's how my dad was able to buy his first house. And then I said to my mum, I said, well, you know, obviously, why did dad lie sort of thing? Because I didn't know. And she said, well, she's Jewish. That's why I found out we were Jewish. And the original Jew people, they're black anyway, they're dark.
So you didn't know your mum was Jewish all the time?
My mother never ever mentioned that she was Jewish, you know, and because she was really humble, really calm and very loving. And I thought all women were like that. But anyway. But yeah, no, she never mentioned it. She, you know, I suppose she never needed to. You know, and I think a lot of people in them days didn't realise that the Jewish people were sort of set apart by God. I don't think like black people, I don't think people really want to acknowledge that. Like God chose the Jewish people and he's put a special anointing on the Jewish people, I believe. And there's, at the end time when Jesus comes back, he's going to be sort of dealing with the Jewish people. And the Bible calls it the time of the Gentiles will be fulfilled. There's going to be a time, I believe, when God says, okay, the Gentiles, the non-Jewish people, have had their time, you know, and because first salvation was for the Jews, and then the non-Jews come in, and the non-Jews, you know, they were happy to receive it because really, God is here for everybody. He's not here for the Jews, he's not here for the blacks, he's not here for the whites, he's here for everybody, and he always has been, you know, and but he used a line, like he uses the Christians, to let people see him. So because they were the Jews out of order and doing all wrong and sort of going off track, there was a time when God knew, like, you know, it just had to be for everybody. And now we're in a time for everybody. So like my parents, when they come here, as black people loving Jesus, you know, a lot of people talk about God, but obviously Jesus. And the people who were from the West Indies, they used to come to our big houses. My dad always had big houses. And because they used to stay there, because a lot of people used to stay in people's houses. So it was easy. So a lot of people knew my parents. Like when I was younger, I felt like we knew everybody. You know, I thought there wouldn't be a black person that we don't know. Like my dad, I remember, used to drive, take me down the docks. We used to go up the valleys. There's a story that I found out in the last, say, 10 years. Because I used to go to this church in Merthyr Tydfil. And there was a man, the church I used to go, God sent me to the church. God said, you need to go to this church. So I ended up going to a church in Merthyr. Anyway, I go to this church in Merthyr, and the man who's preaching in his church, I thought, I'm sure I've seen this man before. Now, my dad died when I was 13, right? So these people I would have known if I knew them when I was really young. So anyway, so I started talking to this man, and he said, I used to go to your dad's church. So anyway, we're talking, and I go over his house, I meet him. And then he introduced me to his brother. So I'm speaking to his brother. The mother's still alive. She must be about 100. Right? So I'm speaking to the brother. And the brother says, I want to tell you something. He said, I was a sexton. That, no, I don't know what that was. But that's someone who works in the cemetery. I think it's who looks after the graves and all that. I think that's a sexton. And he said, after the Aberfan, is it? The landslide, 1966. He said, your dad, he come up and he was praying and everything here. And he said, and then he was at the cemetery, at the graveyard. And he said, and we were talking. And he said to me, do you want to lift home? So I said, yes. You know, anyway, so he said, anyway, I ended up going back at your parents' house, having fellowship, having prayer meeting. He said, but then at some point, your dad brought you people, you know, you lot up to whatever he was, say Merthyr, or whatever it was, anyway. And he said, and you know, all the black, he said, all you children, come out the van. And everyone was looking like, who were they? Because they never really seen black people before. You know, you hear stories like that. And yeah, I remember that. And I remember when I was a child, we used to go, like I said, we used to go to different places in the valleys and everything. And I used to think, these people are strange. They used to keep chickens out their back gardens and all things like that. I remember that, you know. But I wish I would have listened more, you know, because I wasn't interested, obviously, as a child. You're not interested in what big people are talking about. But I wish I would have really listened and sort of learned more about their culture, where they come from, and things, you know, because Wales is so known for Christianity, for revival.
Was your mother from Jamaica as well?
My mother was born in Jamaica, but my mother's Jewish by birth because it comes down the woman's side, which means I'm Jewish by birth. I'm not Jewish at all, but by birth. And it sort of helps you if you go to the synagogue or if you go to Israel, because when you say you're Jewish, they don't care. You know, you could be green. You say you're Jewish and all of a sudden you're part of their family. It's like when I was a child, you know, it's like when I was in a church with the black people accept you as family. You know, when I was a child, you go to the houses and they feed you, you know, they look after you. It's just, I mean, yeah, some of the white people were like that, but with a black person, that's just the way it was. You know, if you're black and somebody comes in, you feed them, you know, that's what I remember.
You said that your father came over first and then your mother came over.
Yeah. But
do you have brothers and sisters? Did they have children in Jamaica before they came over?
I got two sisters that are born in Jamaica. One just died last year, November. We buried her in December. My oldest sister, she's alive now. She's in her late 60s. They were the only two born in Jamaica. And like I said, I visited, my young brothers visited. A few of us have visited Jamaica because... I don't know. When it's strange. When I was a child, I actually got a Jamaican passport. I got a Jamaican passport. Now, the reason I done that is because I used to be... The police used to give me so much trouble and everybody used to sort of give me trouble because when you're black, you know, it's just... In them days, it wasn't... You were different. I mean, and you was different because you're in a class of 30 people and you're the only black person, just say. So I felt so uncomfortable, I felt so out of place, I thought, if I get a Jamaican passport, when people are rude and cheeky to me, at least I'll know I'm not a Welsh person, British person. I used to just feel like that. Everybody has their thing, and that was my thing, to help me cope, because you've got to cope with things, haven't you? If you don't cope with things, either you're going to kill people or they're going to kill you. Because, you know, because I was never the sort of person to sit down and take rubbish. I don't never have taken rubbish. I don't take rubbish. Because my parents used to teach me, everybody's the same. You know, doesn't matter if you're white, red, yellow, makes no difference. You're all the same. God made everybody equal. And then I used to go outside the house, and then I used to be called all the words, all these names that I don't even think they're in the dictionary. Some of the names they used to call me. And so I used to be mad, and, you know, and it just made me angry, and I just wouldn't take rubbish. So I used to think to myself, if you want to think you can be cheeky to me, you better be able to fight me because I'm going to beat you. I used to think like that. So when I was younger, I used to have a lot of problems in school. I used to have a lot of trouble, you know. And, you know, thank God I've had problems. Like my dad would come and speak to the headmasters and stuff because I used to, you know, I mean, it's terrible. I used to get caned every day. I don't think a day ever went by from when I was couldn't remember going to school until I was about 14 without me getting the cane. I got cane every single day because I was always the fault. If I would get jumped by three people, four people, I would always end up getting caned. But when I got older, when I was about 14, I used to be able to beat people so bad that they couldn't cane me no more. So I never got caned from when I was about 14 because I used to beat the people so bad that I'd say, I remembered, if there's trouble, the other person has got to get in trouble too. So they used to be beat so bad they couldn't do nothing because I used to say, what about them? You know, if you're going to cane me, you've got to cane them. So that I should laugh, anyway. But that's why I stopped getting caned. So when I was 14, I got caned again.
So basically, I mean, that just sounds really unjust, doesn't it? You were picked on and attacked and beaten by the headmaster or whatever. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense, does it? It's not...
Yeah, but that's the system. I mean, it's strange. I'd see it like this as I'm talking to you now. You have a mother. Not all mothers, but most mothers, them children can do no wrong. So because the white people were their children could do no wrong. And I used to feel like they used to try and beat me or cause me problems because I wasn't their child, you know, I was different, you know. Apparently a friend of mine told me, he said to me, I found out this year, I think I found this out, he said that the teachers were so worried about me, so frightened of me, they used to ask the other children, can any of them fight me so they can come in a class with me and if I cause trouble, they can keep me calm. That's what the teachers used to ask the pupils. I found that out this year.
But how does that make you feel?
Well, it's funny, right, because I look back, when I was younger and I was wild, I didn't care, I didn't, that was just how it was. But when I look back, I just think it was real child abuse, isn't it? Because if you hurt a child now, the parent will go to prison. But yet I was a child, just like everybody else, but I was black, and I used to get all beaten and all trouble, all things used to happen to me, just because I was black. I remember once I was walking through Sapphire Gardens, that's in Riverside, where I lived, and I was walking home, and I was with one of my friends, and he's like been in and out of prison. He was a rough guy, and we were walking, and there was the police come up, they're in a car, they come out the car, and I said to my friend, I said, I'm not stopping, because you know I'm going to get in trouble. So we stopped, and I just walked off, and anyway, they must call me back, and they started talking, and my friend was a criminal, and then they picked on me, and he put his hands in my pockets and squeezed me. So I punched him, I did, the policeman, and then because I don't take rubbish anyway. So he took me home to my mother, and then, you know, and then I didn't get in trouble for it, because he probably knew what he'd done, and I just got in trouble with my mum then, but it wasn't good, you know, because I never done nothing, you know, and things like that. I mean, that's just one. I mean, I've been, like, I remember I got pulled over, obviously, my car, plenty of times when I used to drive, stopped, harassed. I remember once, and this was in the last, say, 8 years, I dropped off my cousin in Lammermy, and I was driving back to St. Mellon's, and then the police, I see them follow me, they follow me to Lammermy, and then they see me drop off my cousin, and then they follow me, I was with my ex, and they followed me back to the house, and then they pulled up behind me. Obviously they knew who I was, it wasn't that long ago, they checked the number plate and everything, but I was in a bad mood because they followed me and I was just really angry. So they come out the car, because I used to keep my documents with me, but I don't know more. So they say to me, I've got your documents, and I was in such a bad mood, I said, no, I haven't got my documents, just give me a producer. So he looked at me, this policeman, he must have seen how angry I was, brought me out the producer and just went. You know, that was good. I was in a bad mood, you know, I mean, because we're human at the end of the day. And, you know, when we get, because when we're young, we don't really understand racism a lot, I don't think, you know, how deep it is and how bad it is. Because, like, we might just think, oh, I don't know, it's just like we don't think deep. I didn't think, I wanted to think, I never thought. But when I got older, and I started, like I said, I thought then, when they picked on me and gave me trouble when I was a child, that's the same as picking on a little white child. But because I was black, they didn't care. They treated me like I was an animal. So when I look back and I think, how can I be an adult and want to beat or cause trouble on a little, like, 8-year-old, 6-year-old? So because my mind thinks different now, when I get stopped or when someone says something to me, you know, I'll think to myself, why is he saying that? What's the reason behind that? You know, like I got married, I had a family, I was in London, and in London they understand the program. You know, there's areas where there's black, a lot of black people, you know, black, white, they mix, and it's not too bad. In certain areas, they understand. So I come back to Cardiff, and when I come back to Cardiff, got saved, come to Cardiff, and then my wife wasn't well, and I went to social services. The next thing I know, they take my children off me. I went to them for help, and they take my children off me. And until this day, I still haven't gone back. You know, so I made complaints. They found social services done wrong, but they still let them keep my children. They even, when I went to social services, when I went there in 1998, you know, there was no black people in the social services where I was, in St. Mellon's. So I made a complaint, and then I said to them, I want to go with this black guy. There was one black social worker, and you know, they waited until the court case was finished before they'd even look into it. And then they said, no, we're not moving you over there. It was really bad. They gave me a lot of trouble. I mean, this government is, I mean, you get people that are okay, but the system is very, very, very racist. Even today, I not long ago, I was talking to one of my friends, my white friends, and he said, you know, there's still racist, a lot of racism. He said, you know, we don't say it to your face, but we're still, you know. So even though it doesn't seem as bad, and the only reason it doesn't seem as bad, I believe, is because they're catering for everybody. you see these homosexuals, they could cater for homosexuals, bisexuals, transgender, all this sort of stuff. They cater for anything. They don't care. You can be anything now. And because of that, they know they got to be okay with black people. If it wasn't for these, like, all these feminist movements, or the be good to dogs, if it wasn't for all that, they'd still be treating black people like animals. Because, you know, people are still people. It's just like now they know they got to watch themselves, because you say boo to a black man and it'll get you done for racism now. So that's where we are now. But I've moved a long way overnight, really. So, So what I'll do, let me go back to what it was like in the church and that for you. Let me go back to some of that. Okay. Can I go back to some of that? So when I was a child, I remember, like, my parents used to wake us up in the mornings, and we used to have to, you know, praise God and pray and all that before we went to school, before we'd done anything. You know, my parents, they were very, very, very religious, you know, Christians proper. I mean, proper. On Sunday, I mean, it's just, that's just it, man. You don't watch anything, TV, no, it's just all pure Jesus from day start to day night, you know. And my mother, she used to tell me sometimes we'd go to church when we were babies and we'd fall asleep in their arms and stuff like that, because the whole day, Sunday, is church day, you know. And it was like that. And I remember, you know, that we had to read the Bible, we had to learn the Lord's Prayer and the 23rd Psalms. And our parents always taught us, like, you know, you be good, you do right. You don't steal, you don't cheat. I don't swear. I've only swore about maybe 5 times in my life. The first time I ever swore was telling a joke. And my friend said to me, "Why did you swear?" I said, "That's the joke, innit?" You know, it's like really weird. You know, so but it was funny, because when I was a child, I used to think white people were strange. And because I used to go to my friend's house and they drink, they smoke, they swear, they do what people do. So I think white people are strange. And then when I got older and I became a Christian, I realized it wasn't so much white people that were strange. It was because we were Christians, brought up strict a certain way. So we were probably strange to everybody else. And I'm thinking, oh, then white people, they're strange. How can they swear and smoke? Why would they take cigarettes from their mums and stuff? You know, I couldn't understand. So it was really funny when I look back on it. You know, but I have, obviously, you know, as a Christian and as a person, you know, I do realize, you know, people are people. It's just like, you know, I think, In my generation, we were treated bad, and the government allowed us to be treated bad. And I think that's a big difference now. But, you know, I mean, I've spoken to some people, and, you know, white people, and you can see they see no difference. It's just, I used to find it strange, you know, when I moved to London and I come back, and because in Cardiff, people always, when I was here, white people always seemed to talk down to me. But then when I got, obviously I was older, and I come back to Cardiff, 1998, I realised people really were talking to me like I was a normal human being. And that was sort of, you know, I had to get used to that, you know, because when I was younger, I was always used to, like, being talked down to.
So what is that then? Why was that change happening?
Well, I think, obviously I was older, because I was only about 18 when I left Cardiff. I left in 1989. And It was more racist, wasn't it? It was much more racist, much more prejudiced. But now you've got, like I said, now is you can be whatever. In fact, if you're a transgender, you probably get more respect than a black man, you know, because there's fashions, isn't it? It's just strange, and, you know, people are people, and I've got nothing against people. I do personally think some things are wrong, but I think we can do wrong, because God will never say, won't kill us for doing wrong, really. It's just like when we die, we'll have to answer for what we do. But, you know, people are people, and we've got to understand. I think to myself, you know, why should I, or why should black people, I'm just talking now, why should black people treat white people bad when we black people know what it's like to be treated bad? I'm like that. I think, like, you know, we need to treat everyone with respect and love, don't we? That's just how we should be, you know.
Tell me about the Jamaican identity then, because when you were little, you had a Jamaican passport because you didn't feel like you fitted in, and, you know, understandably so. Where are you now with that? Where are you now?
Well, it's funny, right? Because Because the Jamaica, our motto is, I don't know if it's for your, you know, because you're from the West Indian Islands, isn't you? Jamaica is out of many, one people. And I like that. You see, really, it's hard to find a proper white person now, I would say, in it, because everybody's mixed. I remember I was living in London and one of my friends said to me, he said, listen, this is the colour of the future, man. This is the colour of the future. And I said, what do you mean? He said, listen, one day everyone's going to be like this. This was in like the 80s. And I thought, come on. It sounds good. But now I can see it because, you know, I mean, it's good to mix. I think my father, I was speaking to at the funeral. I was at a funeral and there was this one of the white guys who used to go to our church. And he said, you see, your father was into people mixing. He understood the importance. And he said he helped us when we were younger. These white people, he said, he helped us start a business. He said, and I'll never forget that, you know, and we'll be grateful for that because the business is still going. You know, and obviously that would have been in the 70s. But he said, yeah, he was very equal. You know, like my mother, she's Jewish. So my mother was olive skin. So, and my father was about my colour. I'm one of the darkest in my family, you know, which was strange because in this country, I feel like I was brainwashed. I went to school and, you know, I never ever went out with a black girl until I was leaving to move to London. And I went out with a very, very light mixed race girl because I didn't like black people, you know, didn't like black people because I was brainwashed. But, it's really strange, you know, to because there's white girls who only, I'm talking from a man's point of view, a black man. There's white girls who only like black guys. And I used to, when they used to talk to me, or I used to find out, I used to think, you're strange. Why don't you like your own people? Why don't you like white people? Oh, and they say all this about this and this, all silliness, you know. But I was the same without realizing, you know, because I was just brainwashed. I was in school. Somehow they taught me that black people had big noses, big lips, and we're ugly and we look like monkeys. You know, I just learned that from school somehow. And it's strange because I don't remember ever sitting in a class and them telling me that, but I know I learned it from school. You know, and so I was sort of prejudiced or racist, I suppose, towards my own people.
I guess it would have been hard as well, because if you're one in a class of 30, you're the only black person, then you don't really have much options, do you, in terms of liking a black girl or whatever. You didn't have that option in school, besides the fact that it was compounded with the racism of we're ugly and we're this and we're that, and wanting to escape it in some way. But,
yeah, I suppose so.
I'm really surrounded by it.
Well, I remember talking to one of my friends, and he's a year younger than me, but his brother's a couple of years older than me. And he said my brother, the older one, he said he put bleach in a bath and jumped in a bath of bleach, tried to be white. You know, it was really hard in them times. People don't understand because I'm the first generation born here. My father was from Jamaica, like the Windrush generation, you say. But we were the first born here. And it's strange because you had like what you call the docks, and them docks people were mostly, they were there for like quite a long time and they were actually born here. You know, their parents were born here, they were dockers, they come here for years. But as we come in the Windrush generation, and when we come to Jamaican people, they were nice people, but everybody knows Jamaicans don't take rubbish. So when you're trying to tell a Jamaican, you've got to do this, and you're this, you do that, it's not easy for us. So there would be a lot of problems, because we don't like being pushed around. I don't like being pushed around. It's in my DNA, you know, I can't be pushed around. Like, I was a bit different to my brothers and the people I went to school with, because the people I went to school with, they don't mind being pushed around, but I couldn't, you know, it just wouldn't happen with me. There was something in me which told me, I'm the same as you. Who do you think you are? And if you can fight me, I'll respect you. But if you can't fight me, that's it.
Do you think there was a culture? I mean, you mentioned Newtown and the kind of, you know, the people that came from the 1800s and that kind of thing, yeah. And how it was a settled community in that sense. But do you think there was a culture of acceptance of being ill-treated or being ostracized in Cardiff, I suppose, and that didn't sit well with the new migrants?
Well, this is what I know. It's like the docks people, when I grew up, had their own little army, they were very close, they all knew each other, they all seemed to support each other. But remember, I didn't live there. But I never used to go down there, except for when my dad would take me in a van when he'd go and ask people to come to church. But it's funny, right? Because for me, when I was a child, because I used to fight a lot, but we had like an unwritten rule. It was like, if you see a black man in trouble, you help him. You know, because there wasn't many of us, like we were saying earlier on. And that's sort of how it was. But I don't... It's funny because, like I said, it seemed like my parents' generation, them ones, and my dad was a minister, and they seemed to be able to go anywhere and be okay with other sort of black people and stuff. But us, the first ones born here, I found it strange. It's when I was younger, it was funny because we're light-skinned, right? So when I was younger, the white people wouldn't really accept you just because you're black, any kind of black. And then the black, dark people, they weren't too cool with you neither, because you were like in between in them days, you know? In Jamaica, they called us redskin. I mean, it was just strange, I don't know, because then you're taught, like, you know, if you've got colour, if you've got any colour, yeah, and you're black. You know, so you've got to be a black person, but some of the blacks are not cool. It's just really weird, you know, it's just strange. But anyway, I don't think a black person would beat you up just because you were like the colour of skin. Whereas a white man would want to string you up just because you've got any tiny bit of colour. You know, and some white people, they can see black, even when you can't see black. I don't know how they do that, you know, but I know, you know, it happens.
Okay. So the history with Bewtown, you didn't really have a relationship with Bewtown then?
Not until I was like a teenager, late teenager, because there was some in my school. But most of the black, when I was in school, I think there might have been two black people in the A band, you know, because I went to Fitzalan. When I went to Fitzalan, there was, just say there was 2,000 people, and just say, I'd say maybe 75, if that, were black. If that, you know, and like Indians or whatever. And now if you go to Fitzalan, I mean, the role was reversed, you know. I mean, it's strange because, you know, I obviously got children, and even my children, they tell me they, you know, I've experienced racism and stuff, you know. And my children lighter again because my wife was white and stuff. So, I mean, it's just a system. I don't really think it'll ever change because, you know, I don't think it'll change because, you know, there are people who sort of, like the white race, they sort of feel like they're superior, don't they? I mean, they just do. You know, I mean, even now, you know, they still don't see black people as on like an even par, do they? They just don't. It's just the system. Even though we'll get better and better, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Muslim one day, this country, which I, obviously, I'm not really into, but, you know, I just think, I wish that people could just live and support each other. As equals.
That is, yeah, I hear what you're saying there. What are the coping mechanisms then in a system that seems to inherently be against you? What are the coping mechanisms for us and for our children?
Well, I stay away as much as I can from authorities. You know, because what's the point? I mean, I don't like going places because as soon as I think to myself, they see a black face and that's it. And I suppose this is all ingrained from years ago, you know, because obviously it's not all bad. It's not. There's such a change. I mean, you've got the black, is it Emmy? What do they call them? Member?
Mayor?
No, the mayor, the member of
parliament.
The AM. The AM. That's what they are here in Wales, isn't it? Yeah. You've got him. I went to him before for help. He didn't do much for me, but I suppose it's because he's got all white people around him. You know, no matter what happens, we're in a bad... Black people, we're the underdogs, no matter what happens.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, so that's the coping mechanisms. You stay away. I just stay away as much as possible and try and be in the background and just not be in anyone's face, you know. And you've got to trust God as a Christian, you know, and... you know, because I mean, it's funny because I mean, the Christian circle is slightly different nowadays because people realize, you know, that black people, we Christians, we carry something. Like the Jewish people had something in their day, the black people, the African, the African race, they're very spiritual, and people know that, you know. So in the Christian circles now, it seems like the black people are sort of taking over a bit, because we have got it. I mean, even in the city church, which used to be the city temple, they've got, I think they've got like a South American, I think he got colour, pastor now. And they got a youth pastor, Ricardo, who was a black guy. He was the first black guy probably there. And I think to myself, well, you know, yeah, cool. You know, so something's happening. You know, and yeah, I mean, for me, I just think to myself, personally, you know, as a Christian, you either trust God or what's the point, like, you know, it's, you know, because really, I mean, I don't know. I mean, life is strange, isn't it? I mean, you wake up, you eat at breakfast, like you asked me about breakfast, you go to work, you know, you get married, you have children, and it's just a circle, isn't it? Life is just a circle. And, you know, if you're born into maybe a rich family, you know, you might have money, but it doesn't mean you're going to be happy. And whether you're rich or poor, one day you're not going to be here no more. So I just realized, like, you know, if I'm not here, and then when I'm not here, my spirit is going to live forever. I need it to be living in the right place. And I know that's with Jesus, you know. And that's not just because of my culture, because I was brought up Christian. See, some people might think it's because, oh, he's brought up Christian. No, it's because I met Jesus, he spoke to me, and I become a Christian.
So you grew up as a Christian, then didn't?
No.
There was a period where you weren't?
Yeah, I grew up in a Christian household, but I wasn't a Christian. You know, I used to always repent to give my heart to the Lord, because I knew I was a wicked person, and I knew I was a bad person, and I wanted to be safe from one week to the next. So every time, I knew all the bad things I'd done. So I'd go to the front, and I'd say, Lord, forgive me. You know, and I hope that it lasted a week. I was just really bad. You know, because if you do wrong, you've got to pay for that in this world or the next. I mean, if you do something wrong in this life, like if you steal and you get caught, you're going to get in trouble. You know, if you fight and you get caught, you're going to get in trouble. Anything you do that's wrong and you get caught, you can there's a consequence. So this life we live, I knew I was doing wrong. You know, and so I just used to ask, say I was sorry and ask for forgiveness. But then Jesus spoke to me, and I was in a nightclub, and then I become a Christian. And when I become a Christian, I realized then this Jesus, who 2,000 years ago they said died and then raised from the dead and spoke to his disciples, he's the same one who spoke to me, and he speaks to people, and I believe that. So I know, like, it's not because I was brought up as a Christian, that helped me, and that was a foundation, and I thank God for that. You know, but it's because I met Jesus myself. I'm a Christian because I know Jesus myself. I'm not a Christian because my parents, in a Welsh revival, when God visited Wales in 1904, there was a saying, it might have been before that, but there was a saying which said, God has no grandchildren. You got to know God for yourself. That's what that means. I didn't know that, but that's what it means. So I know God, I know Jesus for myself. So I'm not like a Muslim who trusts that his grandfather or great-granddad or whatever, you know, was a Muslim, so he's a Muslim. Or a Hindu who just follows gods because they've been there, they make the rain, they do this, they do that. No, I don't. I'm the sort of person where it's got to be real, you know. So if you're in front of me and I can see you, I know you're real. But don't tell me about your sister, because I don't know if she's real or if you're making her up. It's got to be real to me. I'm that sort of person, even though people think I'm crazy, which is okay. I don't mind that, you know, because it's okay, you know, because this crazy person, when he dies, he's going to be with Jesus, so I don't care. You know, don't bother me.
Yeah, I think it is challenging being spiritual in this day and age, isn't it?
Well, I think it's actually not so bad now, and I tell you why, because anything goes. Anything goes. Except Christianity, which is really strange, you know, because in the old days, when you talked about Jesus, they put you in a madhouse. Yeah, but they are. They called religious mania, I think they used to call it. Well, you know, if you go back in the old days, the proper born-again Christians used to love Jesus. They used to burn them as witches and things like that. You know, so people have always done strange things. But nowadays, it's cool, to an extent, to be a Muslim. It's cool to be a Buddhist. I think Buddhists are quite cool anyway. Because they just go round in circles and they do good, usually. If I was going to be any religion, I'd be a Buddhist. because Buddhists, I don't think, hurt people. Even some Hindus, they just come back and they do good. You know, I mean, I'm into that. But Jesus is real, which is the difference. So it doesn't matter what anyone is or what they... No, man, I want to follow. I will only follow what's real, you know, only. So if I was brought up a Muslim or a Hindu or Buddhist or whatever, I'm the sort of person would want to know what's real. Why do I have to follow something that's not real? I need to have the reality. Give me it real and I'm cool. If someone said they're going to slap me, I wouldn't believe it until they hit me. I'm that sort of person. I'm just worse than Doubting Thomas, I am. You know.
Okay. So I'm thinking, okay, so your father passed away when you were 13?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about a scenario now of this man from Jamaica coming over and his wife following him.
That's what they used to do, apparently. The man comes first, then the lady used to come after. I think they used to come and they used to prepare the way, you know, to make it easier. That's what real men do, I suppose. Make sure that the wives are okay. Or that's what they used to do. No, because everything's changed. The world's just gone upside down, you know. Do you know, if my dad woke up from the grave, he wouldn't think he was... he wouldn't think that he was in Wales. You know, because we've had such a change. I mean, everything changes, but like, wow. You know, I mean, my dad's been dead about 30 years, eh? 30 years. And he wouldn't recognize this country. You know, he just wouldn't. It's just such a change. You know, could be good, could be bad. I mean, a lot of good things have happened, you know. Like, we got the Millennium Stadium. There's a lot of people coming to Cardiff now. And Cardiff is on the map, isn't it? But, I mean, now. So that's good. And but it's such a change.
What advice would you give to young... Well, I guess you kind of answered this already when I talked about coping mechanisms. But what advice would you give to, like, young people now in terms of... Yeah, in terms of... Where to go?
Well, I would say, if I had to live my life over again, first of all, when I got saved, I wish I was a Christian earlier. That would be my main... So I would say to a person, you know, it's good to seek out in your life, you know, where you're going to be in the next life. You know, what's real to you? What's your calling? Why are you here? And it's important for a person to study hard, be good to people, get on with people, you know, because even though everybody goes through struggles, there are a lot of opportunities now which wasn't around in my day, you know, and we're living in an age where you can be anything you want, and you know, in fact, the more bizarre you are, is the more people would accept you. So I would tell a person, just be, you know, be true to who you are, be the person God has called you to be, and always search, you know, for the Creator. I would say Jesus, obviously, but that's the advice I would give somebody, I suppose. You know, your color doesn't have to be a hindrance anymore. In a lot of ways, it can be an advantage, especially if you're a black person speaking Welsh. Because there's a lot of opportunities. So, yeah, just study. I'd say study hard. And my children, I hope they study hard, you know, and just be faithful to God, you know, and try not to have too many different partners. You know, just try and wait for the right person. Save yourself. That's what I would say.
In terms of these stories and these histories, so you know that we're connecting the stories of the Windrush generation and all these people telling us about what it was like back home and what it's been like here and how they kind of, like, navigate that sense of belonging, feeling Jamaican, feeling British, and, you know, how do you make sense of the two and all of that? How important do you think these stories are for the next generation and the generation after that? Do you think it's relevant?
I think it's really, really relevant. Because the thing is, like, I wish now that I would have sat down with my dad, or my dad would have sat down and talked to me and talked to me about what it was like, because my dad's generations, most of them didn't pass on a lot of information. I think there's a lot of illegitimacy. Is that advice when you have, like, a lot of people there? I think in I'd say the West Indian culture, and I'd say a lot of people got family that they don't know about, and it's all been kept secret. And I think because of things like that, we don't know a lot. There's a lot of things that I believe that we should know that we don't know. Like, I think I got probably loads of lot of cousins and stuff that and family that I don't even know about, and I wish I did know about, because family is everything, really, in it. This world is about family, you know, and sometimes we need support from family, you know, and they say blood is thicker than water. Some people say yes, some people say no, But you know, it's good if you can confide in a family member. It's easier, isn't it? You know, so yeah.
Yeah. So I guess in a way, knowing these stories and knowing this kind of legacy kind of helps to root you. In a way?
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
Of course. It's like my mother, like I say, she's Jewish. And I said to my mother one day, I wanted to go to the synagogue. Because when I became a Christian, I wanted to hook... When I was young, I always wanted to hook up with my Jamaican roots. I wish I was born in Jamaica. I hated being born in this country. I hated this country. You know, and I was angry with my parents. Why was I born here? Why was I born here? And then when I became a Christian, I realized then, oh, okay, because God wants me here to help people. And I like that, you know. But, I forgot.
Talk about rooting.
Yeah, rooting. So I was saying, so I always wanted to be Jamaican when I was younger. Because I didn't know my mother was Jewish anyway. And even if I did know, I wouldn't have acknowledged it when I was younger. Because I liked the Jamaican. You know, I like the way they talk. I just like how they are. They're cool. You know, their music, the reggae. I love all that sort of stuff. But then... Anyway, that's it. It's just like, yeah, it's very important. Like, I mean, my kids, I say, look, I'm Jewish by birth, but really I'm a Jamaican. You know, it's easier. It was easier for me to see myself as a Jamaican because, like I said, in this country, because you're so ostracized, you feel like out of place. And now you need to hold on to something. And I used to hold on to my Jewish, my Jamaicanness, even though I never went to Jamaica until I was older. But, you know, and yeah. And it's funny, right? You should say that. Because the first time I ever heard reggae music, not Bob Marley, I mean, reggae music, right? Not Bob Marley. I felt like I had a hole and it was filled. It was really weird. People say they have that when they get saved, when they become Christians. But it happened to me. I just felt that there was a hole there. I didn't even know. I just felt like this was filled when I heard reggae music. Yeah. And that was really strange for me, you know. And I just fell in love with reggae music then. It was like the 80s. You know, when you have like Ika Mouse, or his Yellow Man, all them people, Stitchy, yeah, all them.
Wow.
That was really strange,
that's
yeah.
That's really moving.
Yeah,
that's really, really touching.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're pretty much done. Is there anything else you want to say or add?
No, I just thank you, you know, for taking your time out, you know, your organization and, you know, speaking to people because it is important. I wish, like I was saying, I wish that I would have. My parents would have, my dad really would have took me to Jamaica when I was a child and explained things to me and showed me around. I would have loved all that, just to have that. So I mean, this is for my children and maybe people who are interested in, at least there's something there now. I thank God for that. Okay? Yeah.